Hello, Alex.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Pretty good.
That's good. So, hello, everybody. We're back for another podcast. And we, just before we started this, I was in two minds. Do we do a podcast or not? So, we did a PMI. And I'd like this podcast to be about some of the tools that we've been using that make a real, been making a real difference in our lives. So PMI is an Edward de Bono tool, and if you've got a situation where you don't know what to do or you're not sure, what you do is you look at all the plus things of that, you look at all the minuses, and then you look at all the interesting points of view. And then it's just so much easier to make a decision. So we went through the pluses and the minuses of doing a podcast because it's Sunday. Yes. Sunday evening.
It's even worse. It's Sunday.
Sunday evening, and we have plans for pizza, which yes. I make, yes. And that takes a little bit of time. So when it got to the interesting for me, the interesting point was, it's interesting how much help we have received, how much information that we have received through a variety of people, mostly through books, really, that we come across. It's mostly through books, isn't it?
Yeah, books or sometimes just stumble across something on the internet. Or...
Yeah, but we have, in the last, it's been for ages, but the last few weeks, amazing stuff. And I thought, wow, you know, we're getting so much. What's the least we can do is to pass on some of it that might be of use to others. And once I sort of got that, I thought, absolutely, we're doing the podcast, and the decision made. Obviously, of course, with Michael's agreement, as he's handcuffed to the chair here with me.
Yes, and she's a third Dan and Nikita, so once the wrist lock was put on me, I didn't have much choice.
So, yeah, going back to the podcast we did most recently, and I got a lot of value out of that myself. The speaking out loud about the importance of being able to see both sides of this reality, which is the conspiracy side. What's called the conspiracy side? I don't know what you call it. But the stuff that most people don't want to know about, or just think that you're crazy to even talk about. And then there's the other side of the, what are the tools you need to create a future, to find a way through this crazy world, and have the possibility of something different. You're finding a balance between the two, but you use both. That's so far seems to me just the best way to have both. I feel sorry for people who are not able to engage with the inverted commas conspiracy side, because we read a lot of books. We read a lot of books together, and people will have these great ideas, and then it's like they get up to the very edge of this reality and they stop.
Yeah.
And they have nowhere to go but back into, and it's such a waste. It's so sad. They could, if they could reach further into what's there, what's out there, what they're seeing but not seeing, I just think they could go so much further. But it's as if they reach this glass wall or something and they stop.
Mm-hmm.
But like we said last time as well, there's the people on the conspiracy side who are, they reach their own glass wall as well, which is, oh my God, it's the end of the world, it's terrible, and we've got to make the public aware, because as if something's going to change, which it's not, and they get stopped too. So how can you have both? And I absolutely believe you can and need to have both. So having the knowledge of the hidden stuff in the world, great. But what are the tools you can use to create a different future for yourself as well? So the PMI, which we started with, is one.
Mm-hmm.
Another fucking awesome tool that we have been introduced recently. I'll give you a little bit of history. So about a month ago, I was doing an Aikido class with my teacher, and we were doing sword-to-sword technique. And I raised my sword, and I was attacking her, and I did the tiniest little movement, and oh my God, my back. I'd been having trouble with it, but something happened. And within a short space of time, it just got worse and worse and worse, and it was so bad. Michael stayed home from work the day after, and then the day after that, he had to go back to work. And on that day, it got so bad. It's the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life. I thought I was going to pass out with it. I thought I was just going to pass out with the pain. Wow. It was excruciating. And so I managed to get myself together. I went to
acupuncture
and chiropractor.
Yep.
And made a little bit of progress, but it was still really, really bad. And then I went to the library. Managed to get to the library. Found a book called what's it called now? To Be or Not to Be?
To Be or Not to Be Pain-Free.
Pain-free, yeah. To Be or Not to Be Pain-Free. And this guy was talking about, oh, it was just wonderful. He basically said that back pain.
Back, shoulders, neck. Headaches.
Leg pain. Yeah. So much of it. It's all, it's psychological.
Psychosomatic.
But he explained it in such a way. Your psychosomatic is not that you're a hypochondriac. What we are coming to understand is the unbelievable power of the brain to set off pain anywhere in your body at any time. This pain can be so bad, so excruciating, so long-term, it can go on for 20, 30, 40 years. People will commit suicide to get away from the pain. We're talking, it's phenomenal what it can do. Because I have previous experience with pain and making pain go away, I'm just going to explain why this made even more sense to me. So coming from a background of chronic fatigue and working with another system for a number of years, I had learned and seen that there were ways to switch the pain on and off. So I had a background and was ready to receive this information. Mm. Apparently, you know, he says only about 10 to 15% of the population can handle the idea that pain, that so much pain that's out there now, could be psychological.
Yeah, so it's a psychological, or so psychosomatically they refer to a lot. Basically, the brain, the pain is caused by the brain engaging to prevent unconscious thoughts from coming up. Or feelings.
He says it's rage.
Rage. Well, yeah, they had the bottom line is rage. It's to prevent unconscious rage from coming up, and or sadness. He also said sadness, too, that you wouldn't be able to handle it. So the conscious mind engages and says, oh, shit, we got to come up with a distraction to keep this from being acknowledged or realized or felt. And it creates a pain in your body by cutting off the oxygen. Just enough to cause the nerves to send out pain either to your leg, your lower back, your shoulder, or whatnot. And the perfect example that they were saying too, which I was like observing with you one time when you had a pain and I was trying to massage it, and then you said, "No, it moved," and I'm like, "How the hell is it moving?" Is that the locations can change. It can and have movement. So the guy in the book you're talking about, To Be or Not to Be Pain Free, said, "How in the hell can I have a sore knee or a sore hip for a week solid, and then all of a sudden it goes away, and I can go play tennis, and then a couple of days later it comes back?"
Yeah.
So that's like Alex was saying. The doctors were pretty much saying that, you know, a lot of people can't go there with thinking it's psychological. We've been so shamed by the public to think that, oh God, if it's psychological, you're crazy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we don't realize the enormous power of the brain to cause pain as a distraction. And what was I going to say? Like Michael was saying, help me out here.
I didn't know where you were going.
Right, of course you don't.
Well, doctor, this guy wasn't the original doctor. Dr. Sarno was the expert, because the guy that wrote To Be or Not to Be Pain-Free, yeah. It's a doctor that came across his work.
That's right. So,
and then he was able to run in the Boston Marathon.
So the original one was a doctor who had severe pain, found the originator of this this principle, and went to him and was able to become pain-free from back pain. That's right. So they were saying, he was pointing out the absurdity. You know, how can you bend down to pick something and pull a muscle? And once you hear this stuff, you're like, your spine is all connected. How can you pull one muscle in your spine?
Mm-hmm.
They talked about pinched nerves. It's almost impossible to pinch a nerve.
Yeah.
And if you did pinch a nerve, what would actually happen was that you would have numbness, not extreme pain.
Yeah, and he was also saying that the only way you could really, really have something wrong is either through a traumatic injury.
Yes.
Like a car accident or something.
Yeah.
Because the body is just simply not that fragile.
Yeah, we are not that fragile. So go a bit further then. So we're now reading The Divided Mind by Paul Sarno. John Sarno, who originated this. He was a doctor for years and years and years, and he slowly came to realize that there were patterns happening within his patient, and they just didn't make sense. He's formulated this. They've had an 80% success rate in treating people. Now, here's a really big thing. A lot of people have been healed just by reading his books.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how is that possible?
Yeah, that's what he was saying.
It's absolutely fucking amazing.
Yeah, and he said it wasn't a placebo effect either. They were actually cured.
Once you get the understanding of what's happening, you're onto your own brain. You're onto your own brain. So I have used this myself. I understood it just perfectly, and my back pain is gone. I get the occasional twinge. I walked it a couple of times when I went out for a walk, and it came on. And it was getting quite strong, and I was just, no, I'm not stopping. I'm still doing this bushwalk. And I talked to my body. I told my brain that my spine is perfectly well. There's nothing wrong with my... I'd been to the chiropractor. It'd been checked out as well, you know, even mm-hmm. though he had a name for it. There was no serious, severe anything. So I told my brain, there is nothing wrong with you at all. There's nothing wrong with my spine at all. And I said, I'm doing this walk no matter what,
mm-hmm.
and pushed through it. The next day I did the same walk again. It was a long walk. This time only at the very end did a slight twinge come on.
Mm.
Now occasionally I'll get a slight twinge, in which case I'll say there's nothing wrong with my back.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the treatment. The other bit is to realize, though, that your brain is distracting you from something. And this instance, probably a lot for me, has been to, I've kind of been made redundant twice this year, which has had a big impact on me. It's not a nice feeling. So there was definitely issues came up for me in that. And I could understand at least partly why my brain triggered that in my body, the pain in my body. Another issue I was having was waking up with extremely sore hip prior to this. And in my family, there's with my brother and sister, both had some operation for some weird shit that happens with their hip. And my sister had said to me, oh, it probably runs in the family and you might have to have an operation too. So I was getting quite concerned about that. Since reading this book, same thing, applied the same technique to my hip, going, there's nothing wrong. Again, I'd had my leg hip checked out of the chiropractor, so I knew there's nothing wrong with my hip, and I'm not waking up with the pain. If it's anything there, I just speak to it and say, there's nothing wrong with you. And it goes away. How can that be? You know, how can, if it's true pain, it's going to stay. It's not going to just come and go. So apparently there are millions and millions, this guy's an American, millions and millions of Americans who are suffering from all kinds of pain. And it looks like it all comes from psychological. And like, oh, how sad is that? And wouldn't you want to know, who wouldn't want to know that, wow, this could be healed so easily?
Yeah, his big main point that he stands by is that it's repressed rage.
Yeah.
That it's universal.
It goes all
the
way
across the board. And, it's stored in the unconscious, and the conscious mind comes up with the methods. Distractions, pain, could come up with other things. He said anxiety, depression, there was a myriad of things that will come up and protect. He's convinced it's to protect the psyche. Because people wouldn't be able to handle it.
Or he thinks, they think they wouldn't be able to. That's the thing. Once they understand, because it's created as children when you couldn't handle it or you didn't have a way to deal with it. But as adults now, we can handle it. These are some people have to go to psychotherapy.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just get better by reading the book and understanding the principles.
Mm-hmm.
Then some go to group therapy and they get better, and some have to go to more intense psychotherapy. But this is giving us a sense of the immense power. And when he talks about unconscious rage, he said this is a rage that we have no idea. So he was telling a story about some guy who was angry all the time, just flying off the handle. And so he didn't believe that he could possibly have repressed rage. This, the guy who was flying off the handle, didn't believe this. But it turned out that he did. So even though he's angry, he had a whole unconscious anger that he was completely unaware of. It wasn't attached to this anger that he was doing. So he said, when we have this unconscious, we really don't know about it.
Yeah. He said it's not like the conscious anger or the conscious.
Yeah.
He said it's way larger.
And deeper, and it's just, we don't...
And hidden.
Yeah, it's a hidden one, that, and we don't even feel it. We're somehow numb to it. It's that important that we be numb to it, that the brain will come up and cause excruciating pain to stop you from going there. It's like a totally taboo. So very interesting. But we're sort of taking these ideas and spreading it out into life. You know, what other ways might it be? Well, the physical pain is one way to distract people. You know, how many other ways are we doing that? How much of the structure that we're living in, the civilization, is based on the same principles? You know, we talk about how few people want to know about the conspiracy stuff in the world.
Right.
And are we looking at the same kind of principle here again? Well, we talk about there's a 10-50% of the population who could deal with the fact that physical pain to hide from a psychological problem. So do we have something similar when we look at the conspiracy world? There's a small amount of people who would be willing to look. Most of the people just cannot bear to. So it seems like we may even have a mirror here, and one of the reasons why people won't even look at the conspiracy side of things. It's a distraction. They'll distract with everything else. This world is set up to be a distraction, so they don't look and they don't want to look. They don't want to know. They don't want to consider anything else.
Right. And just a random thought here I just had. I've brought up with Alex a couple of times, probably more times than she'd prefer, is Michael Tesarian, another researcher, had said something that has stayed with me when I looked into his lectures and stuff back in the late 2000s, that he said, if people didn't do the inner work before 2012, afterwards they would find it extremely difficult to live. Which is making me, like, the conspiracy world is so concerned with the external world that probably not very many people are willing to look internally.
Right.
Which is what Dr. Sarno and the TMS, which is called the mind-body syndrome,
right,
is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not talking about, oh, you know, I've got this, I'm slightly angry with my mother because she didn't take me to Funtown this one Sunday. We're not talking about that stuff.
Mm.
Or, oh, I'm slightly angry with my wife because she forgot my birthday 2 years
right.
ago, blah, blah, blah. That's not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close. If Sarno is correct and it's this unrepressed, call it an repressed rage pool. He said there was a bigger pool too.
So there's a rage pool within humanity,
that,
didn't he?
Yeah, within humanity that everybody's connected to.
Yeah.
So, of course, if you combine the two, like we were talking about last time, you can combine conspiracy with reality. I don't know how to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this huge mega pool that's been started since God knows when.
Yeah, well, look at how far does this go back? Rather than just look at this one time that we're in now, who knows how deep this rage is and what would the rage be about? You know, you can see how it would come from. How many different ways are we sort of prevented from just living and being like who we are, or just the life we would like to, how many things come in to stop, to deny, to.
Right.
That in itself is so painful.
Yeah.
But how much bigger? What is there? We don't know what's in the past that
right.
may have caused entire humanity so much excruciating pain.
Right.
And. You know, there may be, this might be within our lives, this inner rage, a micro to a much bigger macro
mm-hmm.
pain of humanity. You know, we play around with, we talk about the fall, Adam and Eve, and whatever. We play around with it. So since Michael introduced me to a number of researchers, there's Gary Wayne, there was Rob Skiba and Doug Hamp. All of them amazing researchers on the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And the research that they did was so convincing and so explains so well
mm.
The possible origin of this world. The whole using the fallen angels. They just do such a good job that it's like, wow. So we refer to it a lot. This is the best explanation I have come up with so far.
Right.
As far as origins and there's discrepancies. There's certain things that I still circle around. There's certain words that I'm not happy with that I think, oh, there's something deeper here.
Mm.
But this idea of these fallen angels of Lucifer, whatever that character is, we play with the idea that this is his world.
Yeah.
We are, and it's quite possible we are guests in this world, that humanity was somehow tricked into coming here. This one of the things we talk about as well is this world is based on seduction.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of saying that we were tricked here, we're seduced here.
Yeah.
And the thing that just continues in this world is constant seduction.
Yeah.
There isn't actually force that I can see. It's really more seduction, always seduction. Look at the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
It's music, seduction. Music. The music, it's yeah. seduction.
Yeah.
You're not forced to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're seduced, and there's something for everyone, you know? There really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your poison, it should be what's your seduction.
Yes.
And probably actually really worthwhile being aware of where you are easily seduced.
Right. Yeah, when you were talking earlier, just a little time, just slightly before that, where we were talking about the pool of mega rage, humanity's mm-hmm. rage. I can share a point of view that I had when I was 18 years old. And if my mother's listening, I don't know if she remembers it or not. But I just got very angry. I was in the kitchen and I said, "Everything's wrong. Everything is wrong." And my mother was like, "What do you mean everything's wrong?" I just said, "Everything. Can't you feel it?" Which I realized, it's like, you know, I hate working. I do not like to go to work. It makes me rage.
Yes, it does.
And it's just that deep feeling of what the fuck, you know, this doesn't make sense. I mean, most people are not happy with their jobs. I know very few. There's a few I do know. And when they go to work, they say it's just fun for them.
But you hate those people.
And I hate those people. No, I don't hate those people. But anyway, envious. But it's just, it was a, you know, and I don't know if that little niggly feeling, and we've seen it used so many times in the seduction industry in the movies, like The Matrix, you feel that splinter in your mind, something's mm-hmm. wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just felt like, and it was like, oh, well, this is completely repressed rage of humanity. Where did this come from?
Right.
You know, why would we be so angry?
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing with the idea of the fall, like you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, could it stem from there?
Yeah, if we had somewhere else, you know, whatever the Eden thing is, then this idea, if we were seduced, so we have as imaginative some kind of like a, on a mountaintop paradise, and then down below is this amazing circus that's been set up.
Yeah.
With like a fun land and all sorts of rides and everything, and yeah. There's music playing.
Music and food, you can smell the food yeah. cooking.
And and so, you know, down from the idyllic mountaintop is, oh, what's that? I want to have a look at that. It's very much like a fairy story, you know, children lost in the woods. Oh, what's that? What's that? What have you got there?
Mm.
And sort of playing around with the, you know, a possible idea of being seduced down and then having to make some kind of an agreement to give up something, to give up awareness, to give up, you know, oh, if you want to come on, you can come on these rides, they're great, but you have to just sign over or give up your awareness, mm. your something.
Yeah.
Something where we had to forego something
mm.
and not understanding what it was we were foregoing.
Mm.
And, yeah, those are, like, we have lots of what-ifs that yeah, we play what around if
play.
With.
Yeah, what-if play, yeah. It can be quite fun.
Because it's a curiosity, you know, what the hell? What are we doing here? What is this about? Why is this, like Michael said, so wrong? Why is every avenue, every area just poisoned yeah. with...
Is it, could I just add yeah. on to the feeling of so wrong, ever since we've played quite a bit back and forth with what ifs, and the Doug and Doug Hamp, Tom Horn, there's a couple other guys there too, Stephen Quayle, Rob Skiba, and those guys, even Gonzo brings some good stuff
yeah.
from Face Like the Sun. When we play with ideas, it's like I came up with one like, oh fuck, you know, what if Cain, who came up with all this spurious knowledge from the fallen angels or something, or prior to, I don't know, decided to build all these cities, yeah, because he had the Masonic knowledge and spurious science knowledge. He built all these cities which he knew would attract people and bring him in,
mm-hmm.
but the after effects of having people living within a city brings out all this quote-unquote wrongness
right.
feel, and just not natural.
No. It just
feels so like, oh my God, you know, because you look at road rage. Sarno talked about road rage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're in a city, you're all congested, it doesn't feel natural. You're the only one I know that can actually drive in traffic without raging. Alex is the only person on the face of the earth that can drive in traffic without road rage. I don't know how she does it, but to her detriment, I cannot do it. And, yeah, just, you know, dip into that and listen to some of the stuff you say to the other drivers. I mean, you get this huge well up, like you could just absolutely obliterate them. And that's not normal. That's
no.
not a natural
no.
anger.
No. It's not healthy.
No, it's not healthy.
You need to. There's another tool. So in driving in traffic, you have to have more of the bumper car philosophy that I use. Now, when I do bumper cars, if we ever go bumper cars, I really hate being hit by other cars. So when we go bumper car, which is not often.
But if they chase you.
My role is to completely avoid being hit. That's all. I just get around everyone, squeeze through. I don't want to smash anyone. I don't want to fight. I just want to. So my whole thing is to avoid.
Yeah.
And that's what I do in traffic as well. If there's crap, I just avoid it. Just, I don't want that. I just go round it.
How do I
keep it smooth and easy?
I hear you. I would love to avoid it at 90 miles an hour when everybody else is driving 40.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to drive up their ass, go.
No, they just need to leave enough space so I can zing, 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 zing in between. But anyways.
And you also have to learn how to do stupid. Not you do stupid. You have to understand there's a lot of stupid people out there.
Mm.
And you have to drive and practice that awareness of stupid. It's a new skill set that everybody needs to develop.
Yes. The awareness to deal with stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And okay, let's maybe hit one last thing before we go off and oxycise and then make pizza. Highly recommend oxycising. We do it most days. So another possible for rage then, and I'm not going to go into detail because pizza is cooling. It's the sex thing. It's the sex roles, which was what I'd originally thought about. Doing the whole thing. But there's no harm in just putting some ideas out there and leaving it. We've touched upon this before, but this is work that constantly goes on because there's more and more to be uncovered. The whole sex thing is the one of the dirtiest, darkest, deepest things that I know. And it's not just about sex. It's the sexes and the how much everything is run the wrong way. So Michael said something to me the other day. I wrote down a couple of things. But I'm going to repeat it, and then you can stand up for yourself. And then I'm interested to see what other guys say too. You said to me, sex makes a man come alive.
Yes.
Well, to me, that was just huge. And it fitted with all the study, the thinking, the watching that I have been doing and seeing. The more and more that I just pay attention and seeing it everywhere, this is a whole lifestyle of just watching and learning and seeing from wherever I am. And what I've seen is that men are the most extremely physical beings on the face of the earth, except of course all the animals are very physical too. But everything is really round the wrong way. My understanding, and I have Michael here too, so it's not just a woman making things up. So what I've seen, what I understand is, it's so bizarre. It's as if men are the heart and women are the logic. Men are the heart and women are the brain. I've got this sense of, and a lot is this through talk with you, that a man is just constantly just a whole skin organ of sensory awareness of pulling things into his body and storing them like a switched on sensing machine. If you think of it, it's like a dog, but it's so much more. And I can also see that the penis itself is a part of this, like both because it's a very strange looking thing. I mean, come on, it really is.
Right.
And we can look from the, oh yes, well it fits in here, so it would look like that, but it doesn't. It's like an antenna. It's like a wand. It's like this amazing sensing device that has a total life of its own. But what I'm trying to explain is a woman looking at a man who's always been totally confused by the male, and in the same way that you said everything's wrong, so there's a sense of that something
yeah.
is wrong, but I don't know what it is. So the awareness is of this, like, my God, this is, a man is just this body of sensing
mm-hmm.
and then and wishing to express it. And as you said, men come alive through sex.
Yeah.
And this energy just seems to come through you all the time. Obviously, men will have different, some will have much stronger
right.
your sex drive than others. Nevertheless, it's coming through you constantly. Women, we don't have that. Now, some women may have a very high sex drive, but I think really they're tending towards the monads, and they have been engineered by this society.
Yeah.
We are far more cool heads. This is why you have, when they say, behind every great man is a great woman, because the man, the word we use is eternal fire. No, not eternal fire. Yeah. It is eternal fire, isn't it? No.
Yeah.
Eternal fire. Yeah. Yes, okay, that's the one we got.
That's what you picked up on.
Yeah. I picked up on that from a talk, a religious talk.
It was Doug Hamp.
Doug Hamp's biblical talk. He wouldn't be happy with that.
You were
one,
just like, ding. What the hell did
I just got
say?
This ding. He talked about the eternal fire as in almost like the hell being the eternal fire type stuff. That, no, wow, this is what men go through. This fire is constantly switching on in their bodies. You know, we women, we generally have no idea, apart from knowing, in inverted commas, that men are obsessed by sex. But we have had no understanding of the sensational, sensory body that is a man. We're trained to think, oh no, it's the woman who's all this sensational, sensory, you know, just buttons everywhere for switching on and, you know, just totally, you know, but it's not. It's the man who is perpetually aroused.
Mm.
Ashley Montague said, you know, women possess sex, but men are possessed by it. It's almost like if you look at our sex organs, they're inside our body. We have this. But the man, his sex organs are on the outside. He doesn't have this. He requires it. He lives for it.
Mm.
And if he lives for it, and if sex brings him alive, then there's so much about sex that we are not getting. We are not getting, it's misunderstood, there's so much resentment between the two sexes about this,
mm-hmm.
because if a man's body, that's it, it's like a man's body is for sex,
right.
whereas we're trained to think the woman's body is for sex.
Right.
And right. please jump in and with what I'm saying, because nothing I say has any value unless you validate it. Or give yours, because you're the man and you have the man's body.
Right. I think we touched on it on another podcast, but I'll repeat what I said then, because it's still valid. That, my body, it feels like I'm pulling in all day certain things, like...
pulling in where?
It could be like a spiritual level stuff or ayahuasca level, like we talk about. Just like experiences or... a good experience or even a bad one, it pulls in towards the heart area and it just kind of like gathers there to a certain point. To use a simple analogy, it's like when you're filling up a container that has like a little pressure valve to release after you've filled it up.
Right.
Like you feel like you've been, you know, you're just plain old full up, and then the sex energy comes in. It feels like it's like...
So it comes in when you're full up. It doesn't come in before that, or what?
Not generally, no. It comes in when you've got that full up feeling, buzziness going on, or an inner intention inside your body.
Right.
You know, buzzing around, like, oh God, okay. If you don't understand it, then it's going to feel like, oh God, I got to get rid of this.
Right.
Like most guys will probably be, oh God, I need to get rid of this. I have a hard on, I don't know why, and I need to get rid of it. But the more you pay attention or your awareness is switched on, it's like, oh, okay, it feels like a time to put it out there, to not reap what you've sown, but I know we've used the word term harvest before, and it's not quite that.
Right.
But it's like you pull it in and...
you're so full with it.
Yeah, full with the experiences that the sex energy comes in and wants to take it somewhere.
It wants to kind of...
come out.
Explode it out. It wants to send it out.
Send it out.
So, obviously, here it sounds like...
Through the orgasm.
You've pulled in these experiences, so then there's this... it sounds like this... these experiences will be turned into something else and sent out through the sex energy. Mm-hmm. Imagine you eat food,
mm-hmm.
and then it gets changed in your body into something else that can be used.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it sounds like you pull in experiences and sensations all through the day,
mm-hmm.
which then get turned into something else, which the sex energy wants to send out, something like that?
Send out or take it with it, or I'm not exactly sure. I haven't quite gotten that far yet. I know it just wants to be out there.
Right.
I don't know if it sweeps in and wants to take it
and
with it.
And you want to say it wants to be received.
Yes, that's true. The sex energy, which is it's neither good nor bad, sex, like you were saying before, has been so twisted.
Mm-hmm.
Twisted, it's been perverted, it's mm-hmm. Round the wrong way. It's, mm-hmm. They got the men, and the men are overstimulated. You're jacked up. I mean, just, you want to go down the conspiracy road, just go looking in the advertisements and, you know, and other things, and you'll find the subliminals and enough information to see that it's the men are being overstimulated with sex.
Right.
The sex energy, it just wants to be received and flow smoothly. I have such a smoother flow in my body now than I've ever had before, and the buzziness, they say, oh, when you're younger, your sex drive's higher. I think it's just that you've been more jacked up or more easily seduced or susceptible. Because
right.
I don't know about that, because mine is just as high as it was when I was in my 20s. So, but it's... It feels... The sex energy just wants to be received. It wants to share these experiences. It wants to somehow... It needs the female to bring her 50% and mix with it somehow and be out there. I don't know what level, if it's spiritual, ayahuasca, I don't know.
Right.
But it's more than just a physical sensation.
Right. So with this, what we're getting is just how much sex is at the heart of you being a man. It's like your core. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so here's a difficulty, because most women will say, ugh, men are obsessed with sex.
Right.
And we have no time for that. It's like, ugh, you know, yeah, fine when I want it, and when I don't, just you're a nuisance, and this is a nuisance, and whatever.
Right.
But if we're not getting that this is the very core of a man, that he cannot help it, that somehow it's actually what he's about, that it's his correct state.
Right.
Then we have to wonder, okay, what the hell? What the hell? If that is a man's correct state, and we look at the animals in the wild and go, well, that's interesting, you know? You know, a lot of male animals in the wild, look at the lion, they do fuck all. apart from copulate and sleep and lie in the sun and, you know, and I know Michael is all for that.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, that gives us the other side of, okay, then what is the female about?
Mm.
And, you know, if we look to the lions, we see the lionesses are the hunters. They do the work, they get it done, and fair enough, too. If the lion is just full up with sex energy in a way, and he's got that to deal with, he doesn't have a lot left over. So here's an idea I've had working with this understanding of the sex energy, and you see it so often in men. If this is how it works, and they've got an awful lot to deal with on a daily basis.
Right.
Is this true?
Yes.
Yeah, just dealing with the sex energy. Then what I've seen with a lot of men is that they seem to grow after and grasp one area where they can be an expert in. It seems to me it's almost like, here's a safety area, here's a safety net. I'll get into this little place and I will stay here and I will be the expert and here's my safety. And they do amazing jobs in lots of areas. Now, they can bring amazing information, whatever. But they this area of expertise seems to be like an area, a safe space to deal with their, to give them almost the space that they need to deal with this daily sex surge energy that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas women, we don't have this. We don't really have this, you know. I'm sure sex energy may come and go high or low with women, but it's not a constant every day. You know, it reminds me of the milking cows. They have no choice. Every day it comes, every day there needs the release.
Right.
They have no choice. It's just how it is. So if we look at women and think about the lionesses and see what they do, their capacity for movement, for... they talk about multitasking this. I don't want to go into that, but the ability to just go here, do this, do that.
Well, you also
you see them in a couple. The woman is generally switched on, and the guy is kind of dragging a bit behind. Or you see it so often.
Right. We had a brief mention in the garden about like the queens, like the.
That's what I wanted to come to last.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was that I was going to the chessboard.
Right.
You look. We see so often in the conspiracy world the chessboard. It comes up, the Masonic thing. Because I'm pretty sure the Masons know all about this. The true nature of the male and the true nature of the female, which has been hidden from the rest of us. So you only need to look on the chessboard. The male can move one space at a time. He's got to be defended.
Mm.
He's not a tough guy, but the game hinges on him, which I think this world hinges on the male sex energy. But the queen can go anywhere. She can move as many spaces as she likes. She's so free. She's so powerful. But the king ends the game, but the queen has all the moves. And if that's the case, then we're looking, everything is around the wrong way.
Right.
And this is the last sort of tool I want to leave with you today, this thinking about and paying attention to. If you're a woman, pay attention to the men all around you, and you will see that they don't have the energy that you have.
Right.
They phase up and down. They phase in and out. They're dealing with stuff that you have no idea about.
Mm.
You know, and if you're a guy, you need to be aware of that
mm-hmm.
instead of trying to hide from it.
Right. Yeah, because the more aware you are and the more in tune you are with allowing the sexual energy to flow through you rather than fight it or try to store it somewhere, the more energy you will have.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was telling you, I've got the most energy I've had in my life.
Right.
I prove it at the when I go to the Shane Cameron boxing gym.
Right. And the other part is that I think there's a great, this may be part of the huge rage of men against women,
mm.
is, because it's all hidden, is to see that women, we have a lot more energy than you. We have a lot more stamina.
Yeah.
We're actually a lot more logical. And I hold fast to what I've said for years. Men get women to do their emotions. So men have all sorts of stuff going on, but they get the woman, they rile them up,
yeah.
and the woman's off ranting, and it looks like she's the crazy bitch. But actually, the men don't know and have never been trained how to deal with all this sensation and emotion.
Don't know, and we've also, the whole programming, like we talked about in the other podcast, where like the roles have been reversed,
exactly.
and they tell the men that you're supposed to be tough and strong, you don't
yeah.
talk about emotions, you don't cry, you don't do this,
mm-hmm.
otherwise you're a wuss. And then the women... You know, they just...
Yeah, and then the other part is that actually women are meant to be leaders, and of course, who wants to do that? Jesus, when I consider that, it freaks me out. Most women, we're not brought up to think about being leaders and taking the role that we're created for. There is, I'm just going to finish on this, there's a system called Access Consciousness, which has a lot of interesting information. There's a book by Gary about, I can't remember what it's called now, Salon de Femme, it's called. But in that, he talks about women's role. And he says, women, it's not meant to be about the future of the world. Our job wasn't to have children. Our job was to be world builders. But we've been trained to think, no, you bring the future of the world by having children, more and more children. No, our role, our ability is as world builders, world leaders. And this, again, this is not to take anything away from the men, but it's looking at reality and going, hey, everything is around the wrong way. You know, Michael doesn't feel less than if I say that. In fact, I think you feel relieved.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big weight off my shoulders.
Yeah. And at the same time, he's totally got my back, and he is my strength and support and protector, which is, hello, there's the male role.
Right.
And so that I can be free to do what it is I can do, and it's very different to what we've been trained to do. Everything's round the wrong way.
Right.
And, yeah, have a play with these ideas if you want to. Ignore them if you don't like them. It really doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah. I stand by them, but I'm not going to stand up and stand before a firing squad for them.
Right.
But I found them.
I'll plug one more book that had some great tools for myself. It's called Wired for Love by Stan Tatkin.
I think you did it last time as well.
Did I? Okay. Yeah. Well, that one has really helped, so I just want to put that one out there for the guys, because if you read it and you get it, it's going to really help you out a lot.
Well, actually, I'll add one more bit to that, because I got an awful lot out of it too. And one of the things I got that I've never seen anywhere else, because I have never seen a role model of a couple to teach me how to do this. All I've had was parents or other people or what's on TV. So there was a story in that book. And because Michael reads to me while I make dinner, when Michael read the story, I was like, oh, sounds a bit of a wuss going on here. The woman was looking after the guy in a particular situation, difficult situation. But then he explained it. So I had both the story and the explanation, and somehow I just got it. And I got, oh my God, this is how you do it? This is how a man can look after a woman and a woman can look after a man and the two can be there for each other? And it was the first example I ever had of something so completely different. And it was like, wow, it's been life-changing.
Yeah, same here. Been very, very life-changing, or however you want to look at it. Paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't have good role models really for anything.
Yeah.
And when they are provided, they are only generally within the structure. There's bits missing, or there's lies, or there's and you get confused. That's why you've really got to keep your sharpness on and take what you like and leave the rest always, including this.
What was great about that book too is that he wasn't a big fan of going and like digging down deep to figure out what these big huge issues were. He's just, you know, hey, these are the tools. Let's use them. They work for now.
Right.
I mean, you can always go, if you want to tackle the other bit, which reminds me of Rosalind, and that's another story.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a life-changing book.
Yeah.
Life-changing.
Yeah. Well, all of these are tools, and that's what you want. You really get yourself some good tools. And just if you have ask questions. Questions are the best tool ever. If you're asking questions, how does it get any better than this? And you're willing to look into your life, the information that you need will come. It might come through a podcast like this. It might come through something else. You don't need me. You don't need anyone. If you're asking the questions and you want something different and you ask for a different future, the information and the tools you need will come. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
And thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Alex.
And best wishes to everybody. And we will see you again in the future.
All right. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.